Thanks for joining us today at Springwell Church, where we want to draw spiritually thirsty people to Jesus by loving God, loving each other, and loving the world. We hope that today's message builds you up, gives you a little insight, and helps you find a brand new perspective. You can find us in Taylor, South Carolina, and online at springwell.org. That's springwell.org. Now let's jump into the message.
Welcome to week one of a brand new series called Pack Your Bags. Now, Karen and I, we love to travel. In fact, honestly, there's some things that we probably would not do, not buy, so that we would be able to afford to travel. The experience of traveling is more valuable to us than having some things. And if Karen has taught me anything over the years in our traveling experience, because she is the ultimate planner, sometimes for me, it's oh me, but I mean, it's awesome. She's the ultimate planner. And if she's taught me anything in our traveling experience, it's this, is that preparation for the trip is essential to enjoying the trip, and it's essential to getting the most out of your trip. And so literally, she'll spend months doing research. She'll spend months doing research, and she'll ask me questions, and I nod. That sounds awesome. That sounds awesome. She'll tell me the dates that we're leaving and the dates that we're coming back. And I always say, that's awesome. But if you were to ask me like 2 days before we're going to leave, now what day are you leaving? I think it's Friday. I'm scared to ask her now because she's put so much time into preparation. And so she knows all of the must-sees that you have to see. So she checks out all of that stuff. And most importantly, she checks it. She checks, makes sure that we're doing it on a budget. And so she will make sure that all of our travel plans are taken care of, that we're going to do a lot of free stuff, and that we're going to experience this trip. We're going to experience everything that there is to experience. And she will also check the weather at that destination. There have been times over the years when we've traveled that sometimes it would be unseasonably warm or unseasonably cold or cool. And so she's ready. And so she tells me what to pack. She tells me most things to do. And so she tells me what to pack. And I'm just saying that if you want to get the most out of any kind of traveling experience, preparation is the key. I think that preparation is the key to getting the most out of life. Getting the most out of the different seasons of life. And I say that because one of the things I think that you learn as you get older is that it seems like that we're always looking to what's next. We're always looking to the next season. We're always in some kind of transition. And so, you know, maybe you start when you're in middle school and you can't wait to get to high school. And then from high school, you can't wait to get to college. And then when you finally graduate college and you get that diploma, then it's out into the work world. It seems like that we're constantly going through seasons of transition. Maybe for you, you know, you're preparing for a wedding. And it's really kind of funny. I guess really it's more sad than funny, but it seems like that we spend more time preparing for the wedding day than we do preparing for the marriage, right? Hello? Y'all out there? Maybe that's why the divorce rate is so high. We want to make the day everything that the day can be, but sometimes we forget to plan for, to prepare for doing life with another person. Maybe your child is getting married. Then if your child is getting married and if you want that day to be everything that they want it to be, everything that you dream for them, then preparation is absolutely essential to making that day everything that you want it to be. Maybe you're pregnant and you're preparing for your first child. As you know, our youngest daughter, who is seated over here this morning, her and her husband Dylan, recently had our first grandchild. Now, let me just say, I'm pretty sure now it's official. I believe that according to Guinness World Book of Records, it is the prettiest baby that's ever been born. I'm pretty sure. Happen to have a few pictures. I'm just kidding. But here's the thing. I know Katie said this after those last few difficult months of pregnancy, and after a very, 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 very long labor, she said immediately, and she still says consistently, we had our first and our last child. Preparation. Preparation. Maybe your children have finally moved out. You didn't think it ever was going to happen. But they finally moved out, and so now you are experiencing that thing that's called, you know, empty nest. And so here's the thing. Maybe you weren't aware of, maybe you didn't know any better to than to plan for what life would be like as empty nesters with children out of the house. And I've seen this a lot over the years where literally parents would look at each other, a husband and a wife would look at each other and say, you know what, I have no idea who you are. Because really, our lives have been consumed for the past 18, 19, 20, who knows, 50 years. Who knows when they leave? Our lives have been consumed with raising children so much so that we forgot to prepare for life without children. Maybe the next big thing for you is retirement. And you literally are asking yourself, have we done enough? Have we prepared well enough? Maybe you're thinking about buying, you know, a house. And so here's what you know. You can't just like pull up at the bank and say, man, I'd like to have a couple hundred thousand. Can you do that for me? Now, they might look at you and say, well, do you have a job? Well, it's new. I've got a job. Like I've been there, you know, I've been there 6 months. I've been there 6 months and I make minimum wage. Well, what about your spouse? Are you married? Yes, I have a spouse. Do they work? No, they don't work. Do you have any money in savings? Nope. I would just like to have a couple hundred grand. And they'll look at you and say, preparation is essential if you're going to buy a house. And you know what? The list could go on and on and on. And these things that come in the next season of life, those transitions can be incredibly exciting, a little bit intimidating, and maybe fear-filled all at the same time. And I'm just saying that preparation for what's next, whatever that might be, and we're going to talk about this in this series. Some of those things we do plan for. Some of those seasons we do know are coming. If you're going to get married, or if you're planning for a child, or you're starting a new job. But there are other transitions that, believe it or not, you didn't see coming. Suddenly there you are in a situation that you weren't prepared for. How do you navigate those things? So this is a series about preparing for what's next. And I want to say this right up front. I'm going to follow up on this more on week 3, but I really just felt like that today I needed to make sure that you understood something I think is very important, at least, is that some of you probably this morning, right here in this place, or maybe you're watching online, maybe you're hoping that new job, maybe you're hoping that new house, you know, like you moved out of one neighborhood and you moved, you know, you kind of like the Jeffersons, you're moving on up, and maybe you think you moved in your mind to a better neighborhood. Maybe it's a new job, maybe it's a new home, maybe it's a new city, maybe it's a new town, maybe it's just a new outfit. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, you've looked in the mirror and you said, man, this is like way yesterday. I've got to get into today. And so maybe, you know, you go to the mall, or who goes to the mall anymore? But maybe you go to the mall, or you go online, and so maybe you get a brand new outfit or several brand new outfits. Maybe you get a new haircut. And so your thought is this: I'm going to do all of this, and all of this will make me a new person. And it won't. You can put lipstick on a pig, but at the end of the day, it's still a pig. The wisdom that you get here, you just can't get this anywhere else, I'm telling you. It's about not changing the outside, is it? It's about changing the inside. And so a new job, a new do, does not make you a new you. And so this morning, I want us to go to the book of James. And we're going to learn from an incredible guy. His name is James. The book is named after him. And just so you know, he's the brother of Jesus. But here's what's really important, I think, because there's a lot of skeptical people, especially that attend Springwell, and I love that. We're glad you're here to investigate. Here's what you need to know about James. Right out of the gate, you need to know that James, who was the brother of Jesus, that when Jesus was alive here on earth, did not believe that his brother, in fact, was the Messiah. I mean, he's like, dude, you're not God. You're my brother. Anybody even know that song? If you're old and you know, you recognize that, raise your hand. You young people today don't know good music. Anyway, so he's thinking to himself the whole time that Jesus was present on earth, he didn't believe, but here's what changed everything. What changed everything was not just his death, but it was the resurrection. In fact, it was the resurrection that changed a group of disciples who were scared out of their minds. And when Jesus was crucified on a cross, were in an upper room, locked in. They were scared to death to go out in public, afraid that they would be the next person on the cross. And yet here's James, and he goes, wow, I didn't see it. Forgive me. I didn't see it when you were on earth. But now that you have risen from the dead, and I see the evidence with my own eyes, then he cashes in all of his chips, and he says, I'm all in. I'm all in, and I'm going to give you my life, and to the best of my ability, for the rest of my life, I'm going to serve you. I just think that's great information. I think there's a second thing that you need to know about James, and that is this. One writer called him a man characterized by volcanic energy. So what does that mean? Well, it means that his sentences are short. They're forceful. James is very direct. He's very authoritative. James is very black and white. In other words, he doesn't chew his cabbage twice. This whole idea of living out his faith for the world to see is so important to James that at times he's like in our face with truth. And James, I really believe, James weighs in on how to prepare for what's next. So he finishes up chapter 1. He finishes up chapter 1 with these words. He says, they will be blessed in what they do. Now, how many people like to be blessed? Go ahead and get up your hand. Ain't a soul here. I'll take a little more blessing. I mean, I've been blessed, but a little more blessing would be awesome, right? So you'll be blessed in what you do. If you do what he says, you'll be blessed in what you do. So the question has to be, I know you're asking, right? What did he say that we're supposed to do? I'm glad you asked. Here's what he said. Verse 22. He says this. This is powerful. Sit here for a minute, especially if you've been in church for a very long time. If you've grown up in church, if you've maybe grown up and you've heard a lot of messages, a lot of sermons on this particular text, if you've maybe read this text over and over and over and over again, it's really, really important, critically important, that you stop and look at these words. Don't merely listen to the word and so what? Deceive yourself. So he's saying, don't fool yourself into thinking that just because you've heard the word, don't just think that just because you heard the word that that's enough. In fact, James would say just because you heard the word doesn't necessarily mean that the word is going to make any difference in your life whatsoever. Now, I grew up around some religious people. And the kind of people that I grew up around simply thought that going to church made them better than everybody else. Anybody know? You might be sitting beside that person. Probably not at Springwell. We're not that church, right? But I grew up with that group, and they would kind of, you know, just leave you feeling really unworthy, like if you didn't go to church. And so this might play out during the week that they might see somebody and they say, "Now, brother, were you at church Sunday?" And they're really thinking, "I didn't see you at church. I know you wasn't at church, but I want to ask if you were at church." And that person might say, "Nope, I wasn't there." And they really want to say, "Where were you? I bet you, did you sleep in late, partied too much Saturday night? Huh? Is that what you were doing, you old sinner? Or maybe you were at the lake. God forbid, you're going to drown out there in that lake if you don't go to church on Sunday." I was raised with those kind of people. I really was. You think I'm kidding? And so maybe they won't say that, but they at least think it. And somehow those people think that they're better than everybody else because they attended church on Sunday morning and they heard the word. And James is saying, that's wrong thinking. And I bet somebody's thinking right now, this is the best sermon I've ever heard. So we don't have to come to church? I mean, so it's like, that is not the point that James is making. So he says, don't merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Notice what he says. He says, here's the thing. You got to do what it says. So let's take this a step further. I know people, I grew up again in a generation and you would hear statements like this. I believe that the Bible is the inerrant, infallible word of God. And you got to say, God, you got to say it just right or it don't count. And so they would make that statement and they would say, I believe in the authoritative word of God. They might even go so far as to say this. They might say, you know what? I was at church Sunday. It was awesome. I mean, the music was off the chart. The preaching was even better. I said, the preaching was even better. Man, y'all left me hanging. I was out there by myself. Noose around my neck. You just left me hanging. And then they'll say, thank you. And then they'll even say, you know what? And the preacher, again, if you're from the South, he stepped all over my toes. So let me translate that for you. What that means is the preacher, in preaching the word, illuminated, pointed directly to my sin. And I agreed that what I'm doing, that this thing that I'm participating in at present is sin. And here's what they think, that's enough. And James would say again, he would say, you know what? You got to hear the word. You got to read the word. And agreeing with the word is awesome, but it's not enough. It's just not enough. You need to do something with what you've heard. And then he says this, verse 23, anyone who listens to the word but doesn't do what it says, it's like someone who looks at his face in the mirror and then after looking at himself goes away immediately and he forgets what he looks like. So James is making the point that merely listening to the word, merely reading the word and agreeing with the word is not enough if you don't do something about what you've heard, about what you've read, even about what you've agreed with. He says, if you do that, then you're like someone who looks into a mirror and says, have mercy, you look awful. But you don't do anything about it. This happened to me yesterday. Man, this is fresh. So I went to have breakfast with some buddies yesterday. And so I told, you know, why it was 7 o'clock, it was early, and I went and had breakfast and came home. She literally looked at me and she said, you wore that? Getting back over here. She said, did you wear that? All kind of smart aleck stuff was, I was in my head, you know. No, I didn't wear that. And she said, I said, what's wrong with what I have on? And her point was, did you look in the mirror before you left? I said, I bet you they didn't care what I had on. I said it a lot sweeter than that, but that's kind of what I said. And so James is saying that everyone, you know, so if you do that, you know, you might look in a mirror and you might check yourself out and then you might go to breakfast with your buddies or you might go to work or you might go to school and people might say, did you like look in the mirror before you left the house? And if you did, hello, what do you think you saw when you looked in the mirror? And James is saying that's what it's like to hear the word or read the word, even agree with the word. And you see that something needs to be changed and you agree that something needs to be changed. And James says, you know what? It's awesome that you agree with the word. It's awesome that you're humble enough to admit your sin, but it's not enough. You have to do something. This next statement is awesome. I think it's just awesome. I should have put it on the screen. Forgive me. You probably want to write this down. Here's what I've learned over the years. This is wisdom again. You with me? A mirror requires, no, it demands a response. Right? I mean, what's the point if you don't look in the mirror for a reason? And the reason is to say, gee, what do I look like? And so a mirror actually requires maybe a second, maybe if you're me, maybe even a third response. In fact, I would ask the question, how many responses does a mirror require? Until you get it right. That's what it demands. And so if I keep looking in the mirror and I keep thinking, oh my gosh, like for me, for example, I thought I looked good when I left the house yesterday. I don't know if my shirt went with my britches or not. To be honest, I didn't care, you know. But maybe if I had looked in the mirror, I'd have said, well, that shirt doesn't go with those pants. Karen would have said, those pants don't go with anything. Like, just throw those pants away. I'm pretty sure that was the look I got. I said, baby, I'm just going to work in the yard. It don't matter. But here's my point. When you look, it requires a response. And you keep looking until you get it right, until you've made the necessary changes. And then I think that what James does is he gives us a habit that will prepare us for whatever comes next. Here's what he says. Verse 25, but whoever looks intently, and the idea here is that you're walking along and you notice something and you get down on one knee and you just gaze at it. And you don't just gaze at it, but you stare at it and you contemplate, what is this thing that I'm looking at? And you just keep looking until you figure it out. Does that make sense? So here's the habit. You stop and stare. As you listen to the word, as you read the word, even as you agree with the word, you continue to stop and stare until you can figure out, until God, the Holy Spirit, whispers in your ear and then directs you to change whatever it is that demands the change. It's a stop and stare. It's not a glance. It's a stop and stare. Then he says this. He says, but whoever looks intently into the perfect law. So the next question has got to be like it is with me. That's why I end up, I love just taking a passage and walking through the passage. And so I look at that and I go, okay, cool. So what was the perfect law? And here's the thing. People would ask Jesus that all the time. Now, religious people would ask Jesus that question, not because they wanted to know what the perfect law was, but because they wanted to trip him up. They said, you know what? We've got like lots and lots and lots of laws. And so maybe we can get you kind of confused. Maybe we can get you to stutter or stumble. And here was Jesus' reply every single time. He would say, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind. Some passages will even put in strength. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. That's the first and the greatest commandment. He said, and in the second, you know what? It's a lot like it. It's a lot like the first. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then I love the way he says this. He says, all the law. This is big. All the law. Everything else, all the law and the prophets, hang on these simple two commandments. And then on the night before his crucifixion, as Jesus is preparing his disciples for what's next, and here's the thing, they can't even comprehend what's next. They cannot. In their minds, Jesus is going to be the next leader of Rome. In their minds, Jesus is going to be the next leader of the known world. In their minds, they're going to be leaders with Jesus, and it's going to be an empire. They have no way to be able to wrap around their brains that in a few hours, Jesus is going to be dying on a cross. And here's what Jesus says. I'm preparing you for what's next. And here's what he says. He says, John 13, a new command I give to you. Just love one another. As I have loved you, So I want you to love one another. And so do you get the words of Jesus? Jesus said, if you'll just love, if you will love the way that I've loved you, if you will love me the way that I've loved you, if you'll love each other the way that I love you, I got to be honest. And these people would have been really confused because they had like, they started with the top 10, the 10 commandments. I'm sorry, it was kind of, ugh. That's the 10 commandments. And then they added another 600. And don't be judgmental. They were just trying to come up with other laws that would help them keep the 10. So now they have over 630 laws. And Jesus says, you know what? I know you guys. I know you guys mean well. But can we just really dumb this down to just one? Just love me the way that I've loved you. Love me the way that I've loved you, and love each other the way that I've loved you. And I'm sure these disciples, if they had processed that, they would have been thinking, oh my gosh. I'm sure Peter would have thought, oh my Lord, that you would even pick somebody like me, and you pick me, and I still mess up. I have the foot and mouth disease. I open my mouth and insert my own foot time after time after time after time again. Maybe Matthew would have thought, I was a tax collector, for Pete's sake, a tax collector. Why in the world would anybody, I mean, I'm the most hated of all my people. Why would somebody pick somebody like me? And maybe other disciples, they could look back and they could think, but you've been so merciful and you've been so gracious and you've been so kind. And yet they would still not have been able to comprehend the depth of that love until a few hours later when Jesus would hang on the cross and shed his blood to pay the penalty for all sin for all time. It would have been more than they could fathom. And so Jesus says, I just want you to love each other the way that I've loved you. And then James says this, and this is so awesome. He says, whoever looks intently, takes a stop and stare into the perfect law that gives what? Come on, y'all out there? I think that's probably the one word that I think I see most people searching for, this thing called freedom. Freedom. To be free. Doing, not hearing. Doing, not just reading. Doing, not just reading the word and agreeing with what it says. Believing it to be true. Believing how it applies to your own life. Not just looking into the mirror, but doing something about what you see. Watch this. And this is where somehow religion has so confused people. You think it puts you in a box, but actually it breeds freedom. Freedom. Sometimes freedom that comes later, but it's always freedom. Let's finish up this verse and kind of put all this together. Here's what he says, verse 25. He said, whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom. And he says, you know, this is not just a glance. It's not just a one-time thing, but continues in it. Not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, just in case we still haven't quite picked up on his train of thought, but doing it, they'll be blessed in what they do. So if you want to be prepared for whatever's next, then you look intently. You take a stop and stare into the word. Not a glance, but a stop and stare. A stop and stare. It's like looking in the mirror. It will always demand a response. So you keep stopping and you keep staring and you keep looking, and then you say, okay, Lord, what do I need to change? Now give me the power to change. It will always lead to freedom. Let me see if I can give you an example out of my own life. I was taught from my earliest childhood memory, my mom just lived these principles, and it was really simple. It was that you give, you save, and you live on the rest. You give, you save, you live on the rest. Now, what's interesting is that the person who taught me this, my mama, she lived on $673 monthly Social Security check. Doesn't sound like a lot of freedom, does it? And my mom was a giver. Now, I got to be honest. As a teenager, made me angry that she was a giver. I remember what it was like when I would sometimes, a lot of times I was out on Saturday night. I didn't come home until I knew she was going to church. And I knew about 10 minutes till 10. I knew that she was going to be in her car headed to church. And sometimes I would come home from a long night. Sometimes I would be home and I'd look in my mom's bedroom, and my mom would have gotten up. She'd gotten ready for church, and she'd be sitting on the edge of the bed. She would take her Bible, and then she would reach down in her purse. She would get her checkbook, and she would put her checkbook on her Bible, and then she would make out a check to the church, and it would burn me up. I think, you know what? Why are you giving your money to that church? I mean, really? you can't afford, you know, I mean, I had to pay for my own car. I had to buy my own gas. I had to pay for my own insurance. I mean, I hear parents talk about, you know, my son's 25 and he's still on my insurance. And I go, what? I know you're gonna hate me. It's different times. I don't know, I'm just saying. And I would watch my mama give, and it would just irritate me. You can't give to me. God, she did give to me. So sacrificially she gave to me. She was a giver. I could ask our treasurer to come up right now, and he could testify to the fact that she was always a giver. And my mom didn't just tithe. She gave to everything that we ever raise money for. We were in a building program, she gave to it. And literally, I kid you not, don't tell anybody I said this. I literally, there's times I went to my mom and I said, Mom, what are you doing? $673 a month, that's all you got. And you tithe, Mom, you're an incredible giver. Why in the world? You've done enough. And she would look at me with tears in her eyes. And she would say, no, son, I haven't. She did save. My mom passed away. She'd save $1,500. She was so proud of that $1,500. And my mom would tell me several times in those last few couple of weeks that she lived that she had that $1,500. And that $1,500 was going to bury her. I never told her. I never said, Mom, that won't even buy you a casket. She taught me these incredible principles. I believe work. I think most people live this in reverse. I think most people live. In other words, it's all about us. And I don't think we're bad people. I don't think people are bad. I think people are just looking at what they believe their needs are. Now, when you come back from a third world country, that will change your perspective on what your needs are. But we have this thought, and we say, you know what? The first thing is about buying. It's acquiring things. I got to have a car. I got to have a house. We got to have new clothes. And I got to have this, and I got to have that. And then the second thing I'll do is I'm going to live first, and then the second thing I'm going to do is save. And even in our saving, it's still all about us, isn't it? Then we're saving. Maybe we're saving to buy that house. Maybe we're saving to buy that new car. Maybe we're saving for retirement, and we're putting money aside. But you know what? When you live that way, it's still all about you. It's about you loving you first, and then give. I think most people live with the attitude, if there's anything left over at the end, then we'll give. The thing I love about this little illustration is I think that most of us know it's true. We get that. And that's why most people are not living with any financial freedom. Now, I wrote that, and every time I look at it, I go, ugh, that's not going to make sense. It's not logical. I just looked at you and said, you know what? If you want to be financially free, if you want to be free, then give. And you're going, no, that's not where you start. That doesn't make any logical sense. Can I be honest? God is not a logical God. He's just not. Read from Genesis to Revelation. Man, he does some crazy things that we would sit back and go, now, what? If I were God, I probably wouldn't have decided to do it that way. But I'll tell you what Karen and I know. It leads to freedom. Freedom. feels so good to be able to give to people who have needs. Oh my gosh. And then to save, to be debt free, to be free. And we've tried our best to teach this to our kids. There are principles that were very important to us that we've tried to teach our kids. And so I asked Katie if I could at least share part of her story. One of these days. One of these days we'll share her whole story. When she's ready and it's God's timing, we'll share that story. But I'm going to give you the skinny on Katie. And so the skinny on Katie is simply this, is after a lot of church hurt, she left the church. And when I say she left the church, I mean she left the church and she stayed away for about 10 years. When I say she stayed away, she didn't go to church. And when Katie decided that while well-meaning but fallible people let her down, what she came to realize was that God didn't. So she decided that she would give God another shot. And I'll never forget the day that she called me. She called me, and here's the question that she asked. You ready? Dad, how can I start tithing online? Honestly, I think I can say this, and she'll probably laugh with me, I hope. I want to say, Katie, what are you smoking? You still love me? Baby girl, are you high? I mean, tithing? I mean, I'm old as dirt. I have never heard this in my life. I mean, this goes down as the what? Tithing? And so I said, you know, are there some other things? There's a couple of habits. Your mom and I can help you. I mean, we got a couple right off the top. If you'd stop this and stop that, I think that'd be a great start to your walk with Jesus. Maybe even start coming to church. I mean, for Pete's sake, Katie, come to church. Maybe we thought that, but I never said a word. I did say, why tithing? Here's what she said. She said, well, Dad, you and Mom taught me my whole life that God said, test me in this. Right out of Malachi, test me in this. And so I'm going to test God. I got to be honest, I was a little nervous. I said, can we go back to the, maybe a list of stuff that you should stop? You know, maybe. And then here's what she said, and this was so sweet. And she said, Dad, I've seen how you and Mom have lived out these principles. I've seen how they work for you. I'm not coming to church. Truth is, she said, I'm still going to smoke pot. I probably shouldn't have told y'all that. We'll do the rest of her story later. And I've seen that they work. I've seen how they work in your life. She started with tithing, and I'm sure you're thinking, what in the world does that have to do with loving others the way that God loved me? It's so simple. Because you can't love others and not be a giver. You can't. It's impossible. You can't do it. If you live first and you save second, and you give last, then there's always somebody between you and God. There's always somebody, something between you and loving other people. You just can't. God set the example. God so loved the world that he gave. Jesus so loved the world that he gave his life on the cross. And it's impossible to love like Jesus loves and to not be a giver. And Karen and I can just testify to the fact that it leads to freedom. Wonderful, beautiful, incredible freedom. So here's my challenge to you. It's real easy. What do you see when you look in the mirror? For Jonathan and I, for anyone who graces this stage, our prayer is always, please know, not that we look good, that people walk away talking about what a great communicator that I am, that we are, but that people are challenged with the word, that you hear the word. So what have you been hearing lately? Maybe you're like me. You know, maybe you get up at some stupid time of the morning so that you can read the word. What's God been saying to you? You can't. I promise. You cannot spend time with him. You cannot be in the word and him not speak. I got to be honest, there's times I wanted to say, Lord, like, you can have the day off. I don't really, can we just like chill for a while? And then he points out things. And you know what? It always demands, I could tell you a story about just last week alone, or when we were in Guatemala. I could tell you about a story. And God demanded a response. I looked in the mirror. It required a response. How about you? The interesting thing is, I don't even think you have to be a Christian to get the do principle. I think it makes sense. But here's the thing that you need to know. If you're not a follower of Jesus, what you need to know is, I got to be honest, it's up to you to change on your own. If you know anything about recovery, then what you know about recovery is that you need a higher power. You know that you cannot find healing on your own. And we don't beat around the bush here. It's not just some higher power. No, no, no. It's God. It's Jesus. It's the power of the resurrected Savior. And here's what I want you to know. He's crazy about you. You have a problem with sin. If you don't, see me afterwards. I'll get some friends together. We'll help you. I promise you have a problem with sin. But here's the beautiful part. God said, I want to be in a relationship with you. So he gave. He gave his son. Jesus said, I want to mend the brokenness between man and my father. The sin problem. So I'll give my life to fix the problem. Jesus gave his life. He's crazy about you. And becoming a Christian is understanding the truth that Jesus was God's son, that he went to the cross, that he died on the cross, that he paid the ultimate price for sin. It's to believe on the third day that he was raised from the dead. That's awesome. You can agree with the truth, but it's more than that. It's fully surrendering your life to him and saying, oh, I don't have the answers. I need forgiveness. I need you. If you're here right now and you're not a follower of Jesus, every head's bowed, every eye's closed. Maybe you'd pray a simple prayer. Maybe your prayer would simply be this: God, I know I'm unworthy. I know that I'm a sinner. And I agree with the truth. I can't explain the resurrection, but I believe it. So I want to put my faith and my trust in you. I'm asking you to forgive me of my sin. To the best of my ability, I'm going to surrender my life to you. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your goodness.